The following program is produced and furnished in conjunction with Mark Amtower of Amtower & Company, which is entirely responsible for its content.
This is Amtower Off-Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. Every week, author, speaker, consultant Mark Amtower gives you his take on what's going on in the world of government contracting. Amtower Off-Center, with your host, Mark Amtower.
Welcome to Amtower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com at 1500 AM. I'm Mark Amtower. I'm here today with two of the Bloomberg government folks, Cameron Luthy, senior analyst, and Daniel Snyder, part-time bank president for Sandy Spring Bank. And you're the deputy director for contract research, right?
That is right, sir. Yes, sir. Not to be confused.
The other Snyder is the,
is the misfit.
You knew that, right?
Of course.
Okay. Just making sure. We're going to be talking contracts. We're going to be talking money. We're going to be talking popular vehicles for selling stuff to the government. So sit tight, pay attention. Cameron, start us off with where we are in the budget cycle.
Right. So as everybody knows, the budget is late, and that's not news. It's always late. In the last decade plus, getting the federal appropriations done on time, the money that pays for keeping governments up and running, doing contracting, hiring federal workers, it doesn't get done on time. The fiscal year started October 1. And here we are, November 1, and nothing's changed. The government is still operating under a stopgap or continuing resolution funding bill that expires December 8th. So the real question is, where are they in terms of cutting a deal to fund federal agencies for the entire year? And at this point, we know there are talks going on at very high levels between the Congress, the congressional leaders in both parties, and the White House, but they're early stage, and at this point, we don't know what the compromise will look like or whether or not they'll reach a compromise. And we know what happens if they don't. There are two possibilities. One is they kick the can down the road and extend the CR, and the other is there's a government shutdown. And that would be definitely bad for business, but so would an extension.
Well, extensions are always bad for business, but we're kind of used to them because it's been 23 years since a budget's passed on time.
And think about last year, right? So for fiscal year 17, the year that ended September 30th, they did not have full funding in place until May 5th. So that tells you, now obviously there were some special circumstances because it was an election year that changed parties in the White House, and there were other reasons for it. But it's just really hard to cut a deal.
There's that, and the fact that very few people in Congress seem to have a full complement of body parts doesn't help.
Well, the other aspect is, of course, the president's budget called for a $54 billion increase in defense spending across the government and a $54 billion reduction in non-defense spending across the government. That's something that isn't going to fly on the Hill. In fact, there were Republican leaders who were opposed to some of the budget cuts as proposed by the Republican president. Big cuts to EPA, big cuts to the State Department of Foreign Aid, and so on and so forth, that Mitch McConnell wasn't happy with. So, you know, what we think is most likely is at some point they will get to a compromise. They'll cut a deal. It could be for 1 year or 2 years, and it'll increase defense spending some, and it'll increase non-defense spending some. That requires raising the spending caps. And then, you know, if they need more money for defense, they'll throw it into the war budget. So that's what we're forecasting. The question is when.
All right. So Dan, tell me what this means for current vehicles and emerging vehicles.
Thanks, Mark. So I think before we get into some of the major competitions that are occurring right at the start of fiscal 2018, we want to dispel the misconception that a delay in budget translates to a delay in award of many of these vehicles. We at Bloomberg Government track it in a three-phased approach. So we have our top 20, which is updated on a weekly basis. Then we have a source selection tracker, which is everything waiting award. And then we also follow the most recent award. So The middle phase of that doesn't really have much of an impact on the award of the vehicles because they only have to hit that minimum threshold, which is usually about $2,500. And regardless of what money the agencies are authorized to use, they at least have that in the bank to get these contracts awarded. Where it does become an issue is activity under the task order level. So some of the issues in the delay of the budget and as agencies prioritize what needs to be done, contractors could be impacted at that task order level, almost certainly.
And to add to that, as you know, Mark, new starts are not allowed under a CR, and program increases are not allowed under a continuing resolution. So that's where there are problems that are created for the contracting environment. But one of the escape valves, if you will, is multiple award contracts that are already in place. New task orders don't count as a new start.
Right. So Dan, what you're saying is the awards may occur, but money may not be necessarily applied to these vehicles. And Cameron, what you're emphasizing is the existing vehicles are going to get more traction as a result.
Exactly correct. So as it stands right now, we came out with our list at the beginning of the fiscal year, and even since then, it's somewhat gone down in value. Right now, it stands at $180 million or billion dollars or so, and it lists some of the major acquisitions that I think are on the radar of many of your listeners, Mark, such as an on-ramp for a vehicle like Oasis or One Acquisition Solutions for Integrated Services, which is our number one opportunity. Another one that I think a lot of listeners are interested in is the Seaport Next Generation,
yep,
which recently defined their acquisition strategy, and it looks like they're going to go for a leaner, more refined list of contractors once that gets its legs and is awarded by about 2019. Mm-hmm. And then the third one is another one out of FBI, which is a BAA for IT supplies and support services. Number four is one that you and I talked about, I think last week when we met, and that's the one that has had a lot of recent developments and looks like it's going to have an RFP drop, and that's the $10 billion LogCap 5, which I know a lot of contractors attended that recent industry day last Friday.
Yeah.
So that's just a sample of some of the contracts that we're continuing to track on a weekly basis.
Yeah, note the five at the end of that log cap thing. How long has log cap been around now?
It's almost...
Since my infancy?
Since about the 80s, yes. So yeah, the major competitors on that are going to
be... That wouldn't
be
mine.
Yeah, not, nor there. Mine, Mark. But it's been around a long time, and it's, you know, logistics support, which has a broad definition. There's a lot of different types of activities that go into that and a lot of money, and... the degree to which the op tempo in the Middle East has been higher than anticipated makes this worth more to the vendor community.
Now, that's a good point, Cameron, because so he touched on something that we've highlighted at Bloomberg Government. And when the Army and DOD released their ceiling value for that contract, it's listed currently at $82 billion, which seems a little egregious even for some of these ceiling values, which... never reach their capacity. But in all
likelihood,
I like
the number though.
Yeah, 82 seems a little high according to our estimates. We think perhaps somewhere in the neighborhood about $1 billion a year is more realistic to flow through that vehicle on a regular basis. And some of the big contractors who have been on that vehicle since the onset, such as KBR, and PAE floor. And floor will continue to compete for those orders in the future.
Cool. So go through a couple of more of these because I have the report in front of me, and we're talking about $200+ billion here, mm-hmm, plus or minus. So give me the next couple of biggies that should be awarded near term.
So these are all opportunities that have yet to release a final RFP. Some of the
cool
ones that are my
even better
favorites are the Defense Intelligence Agency's SIA-3, which is now in its third iteration, and is valued at $6 billion. And that's an interesting vehicle because it is a lot of money, $6 billion. But also it's a very narrow subset of contract recipients that they're going to continue to have under that vehicle.
What's the scope of work?
So the full scope is professional services that will be available to the intelligence agencies.
Okay, so any of the 18 ICs can go through this vehicle?
Yes, predominantly it's going to be specifically for DIA, but I think it is available for other agencies in the intelligence community.
Is this like the other things they do? It's your contract, I don't want to use it.
So the spending under this one is classified, so it's tough to identify exactly how much.
We're not going to see it in FPDS?
No, not anytime soon, at least. But they have, interestingly enough, on a similar vehicle, as you do mention, they have been revealing some of the activity, which covers information technology. And I want to compare those two because it's interesting, the acquisition strategy that DIA is defining for CIA-3. Compared with the IT vehicle. And when that was awarded in 2015, they included 50 award recipients. And it's about, if I remember correctly, I think a $25 billion ceiling. So our projected forecast was that the two would kind of go in lockstep with another. When they were both in their predecessor phase, they each had about a dozen recipients. Now, the IT portion of it has pulled ahead and said, we're going to extend that. They awarded 25 large businesses, 25 small businesses to perform all of the information technology work at DIA. Now that we're moving forward in the second phase of that approach, which is the main vehicle the agency will use for professional services, they're actually maintaining the status quo and sticking with the 12. I had thought, and some people had expected there to be some parity.
Expansion?
Yeah, but it looks like based off what we're hearing from clients.
Of those 12, are they all large?
No, thank you for asking. Well, that's a
if they open were before,
to interpretation.
Are they now?
So, Mark, they have, at least from what we're hearing in the industry today, carved out 6 small and 6 large. But there's a bit of a caveat. In order to compete as a small business, you have to do the proposal work in a SCIF, and you have to have 7 past performance work. So depending on what type of small business may be preparing for such proposal, it could make it rather difficult.
All right. You're listening to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'll be back with Cameron and Dan right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off-Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. If you could listen to the outtakes, you'd be laughing your butt off. however, you can't, so too bad. I'm here with Cameron Luthy and Dan Snyder of Bloomberg Government. And the reason they're here is I went to a briefing a few weeks ago, the Army briefing during the AUSA conference, that was absolutely great. I like going to their briefings for two reasons. The networking is superb, but the information is also, from my perspective, just really enlightening. I don't know if you guys issued a report around that one or not, but the other reason you're here is that a few months back, I co-opted one of your studies and did an article for Federal Computer Week, the CDM study, which, again, I just found fascinating because you did a 5-year study, 2012 to 2016, on the spending through very specific contractual vehicles on trackable CDM stuff. You tracked $1 billion worth of activity. What I thought was cool about that is one of the major players on that was a small business.
That's exactly correct, Mark. So I guess there's two ways to answer that. So the report that you're referring to is derived from what we define as a BGov market. So that has used 15 different proprietary keywords that our information technology analyst, Laura Crist, has defined for what we think is CDM spending within the government market. So I guess to help 115 keywords. So In order to help conceptualize what this consists of, I guess you could think about it in the context of category management, right? So they'll do high level type stuff from information technology, professional services, facility maintenance. And it's nice to categorize how much is flowing through that and which vehicles they consist of, right? What the difficulty is in terms of what we've been hearing from the Bloomer government clients is we can't get down to the real granular important stuff underneath that information technology. So we want to hear about insider threat. We want to hear about CDM. We want to hear about these emerging technologies. And what these BGov markets have been able to do is leverage the data analytics behind that so we could define which vehicles are attracting most of these dollars.
And we've had help from our clients in coming up with the keywords to narrow the search so that these important markets can be revealed from the millions of transactions in the federal procurement data system.
It's funny you should say that, because when I'm helping clients with their websites, I'm always picking their brain and scouring RFPs for those phrases that you don't hear anywhere else.
Yeah. You got to be unique. You got to stand out, right?
Yeah.
All your social media.
Found.
Yes.
So I guess another important thing to mention in the context of CDM, there is a conference being held about CDM. So if you remember back in the summer, they announced that instead of competing $2.4 billion in task and delivery orders via Schedule 70, they were taking that and switching it over to the Alliant competition. So the acquisition strategy for that is still being defined, but the repercussions may be that it will limit the availability of competitors. And if there is potential, Alliant 2 could be the vehicle it lands based on the timing of that award.
Yeah, but in your initial CDM report, if you combine SOUP 4 and 5, it outpulled the BPA that GSA and DHS came up with.
Exactly.
As far
right.
as total dollar award. So roughly half of the spend on CDM in that five-year period for the study, 12 to 16, was through SOUP.
Exactly correct. You articulated that perfectly. So the report looked at government-wide CDM. So that's
right.
going to be all of the government-wide transactions going through some of the popular vehicles such as SOUP. And you mentioned the
Alliant,
BPA.
Pretty popular too.
Yeah, Alliant.
Is the BPA going to be folded into the Alliant?
So the orders from that are. So that BPA before it was on, when it was on IT-70, generated between $400 and $500 million. Mm-hmm. So based off the projections that the GSA is forecasting into the future, all signs are suggesting that will increase to $2.4 billion. And that is being defined, as we say, at this conference. We expect more details to emerge.
Cool.
And we do have two analysts going to that, so we should have more details upon that.
Just two?
Just two.
Yeah, well, we're small, but what was the joke? Small but wiry.
There you go. You have anything to add on that one, Cameron?
No.
Okay. Then I want to move on to another one of your reports that I wasn't aware of until you sent it to me just yesterday.
Yes.
and it came out in May, and that's the HCATS, because you know, for a long time, if you were in the training or learning management system arena, the OPM vehicle, and I can't remember the name of it, was the place to be.
TMA was the predecessor.
Right.
And if we remember correctly, Cameron, I think this is one that you're familiar with. During the competition, there was a lot of debacle. So they actually awarded and then canceled it, and now we have HCATS. So upon further protest delay, here we are, and it looks like HCATS is getting ready to find its legs.
And there's not a lot of activity yet, but we expect it to start building up quickly.
Okay.
Yes. So that.
Well, yeah. I mean, but it was awarded in 17.
Right. Exactly. So they just got through some protest delays. So despite it being awarded in fiscal 2017, there's activity that's starting to flow through those contracts.
But it's a new vehicle that can get.
Exactly.
Okay.
And the thing that's unique about HCATS is it's got the blessing, if you will, of OPM, right? So they worked in conjunction to compete this vehicle. And now that it's finalized, they're going to issue task and deliveries orders to those 110 contract holders now. And what's unique, I think, in the eyes of the contractors, more not just the HCATS holders themselves, but the contracting community, is they minimize the importance of pricing at the task order level. So they gave the ability to match some of these labor categories to the requirements at the task order level as they're being competed. So it gives the government representatives a little bit more flexibility in defining the scope of those parameters.
Okay, now HCATS technically is not a schedule item, but does it compete with 738X and the CORP schedule?
That's exactly correct. So 738X, which is a GSA schedule, will continue to exist and hypothetically compete against HCATS for orders. I think HCATS will handle more of the high value task orders and complex requirements,
kind of gigs.
And then the 738X will do some of the smaller low margin type work. So I guess to relate it to some of the steps that GSA has taken in the past is OASIS handles complex requirements for professional services, and the corporate schedule handles some of the more lower quick turnaround tasks. So I think the idea, and like I said, it's still getting its legs, so we'll see if it comes to fruition, is that the complex requirements for human resources will be handled on HCATS, and then more of the smaller tasks will be facilitated through 738X.
But, you know, I don't know how granular you're going to be able to get on this, but I was doing some research the other day on the corporate schedule because a company that I work with is there.
Yep.
And there's still training available through that as well.
Absolutely.
But is it going to be a preferred vehicle, or is it now the bastard child?
No comment.
I think it's a little early to tell, but I think clearly that division that Dan outlined is makes sense if you think about it. Right. If you think about from a PSC or a NAICS code standpoint, training is a big bucket. You have all kinds of things like routine classroom training, sexual harassment training, ethics training,
certification,
all the way to much more sophisticated training that's more niche skill sets. The military is going to be using HCATS. We know they worked with OPM, right, in putting this vehicle together. So it's a diverse market in terms of scope, the type and sophistication of the training.
Right.
And we think that there's going to be, it depends on the federal agency, but some agencies we believe are going to have, rely on and contract for more training going forward because of changes in the work environment, changes in the external environment. Think about IT. For example, right? But go ahead, Dan.
I just want to pause on one thing Cameron said there because I think it's an important element when we're discussing how human resource is going to be acquired by the government. When they competed HCATS, GSA and OPM were kind of holding hands, and then DOD said we are participants. So they're kind of one foot in, one foot out, and I think they're the X factor party. So. We have to be mindful of the fact when we're looking at the whole government-wide market for HR services, they've also, DOD that is, out of Army, handles a vehicle known as HRSS, which Serco has overwhelmingly performed well on. And then companies like Booz Allen rely more so on HCATS, that is. So I guess it's important to see how DOD will react now that they have these options available.
So if they hokey pokey out,
so
50% of the training budget's going to go
someplace else.
I think there was some speculation whether they would recompete it. They eventually did, and now they have the $9 billion HRS-2, which is in source selection currently. So it looks like all signs indicate that should be available for usage within the next 9 months. But they could use HCATS in the meantime. They could decide that they're
It's available for usage if a budget passes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, picky, Mark.
All right. You're listening to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com and 1500 AM. We shall return right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on federalnewsradio.com, 1500 AM. I'm Mark AmTower. I'm here with Dan Snyder, the Deputy Director for Contract Research at Bloomberg Government, and Cameron Luthy, a return guest who is a senior analyst at Bloomberg Government. Early warning, Cameron's going to be back sometime in the next month or so before Christmas, so you can buy some books for Christmas. We're going to be talking about our favorite military history books, and we're going to be applying lessons to the government market from those books. So there's the spin, Cameron.
So we'll have fun.
We will. Hopefully somebody in the audience will. But if not, too bad. Let's move on to what's in source selection at present.
Mark, we identified some of the important contracts that are coming up for competition, which capture managers and business development professionals are likely focusing in on as we wind down the first month of fiscal year 2018, believe it or not. In addition to those upcoming RFPs, we also track what we call a source selection tracker. So if I may just cherry pick a few of my favorite children from this list.
Please.
I'd like to highlight what we at Bloomberg Government at least identify as some of the most important contracts that will shape government contract spending once awarded. So as it stands right now, the list is 27 programs totaling $266 billion. A few that I think are important on that list is certainly...
You know, Everett Dirksen's spinning. Right?
Yes, yes. A billion here, a billion there. Pretty soon you're talking real money.
Yes.
And I'm old enough to remember Everett Dirksen.
So, of course, I think the single most important one on everyone's mind right now is GSA's Alliant, which all signs indicate they are on schedule to award that at the end of December. It's also important to note that there's a two-year overlap with the predecessor Alliant and Alliant 2, so it will be competing against those two, and there will be some overlap, which the agency hopes will minimize the time it takes to on-ramp the vehicle. Yeah.
Well, that's pretty cool, because if you don't win the new one and you're still on the old one, you still get some traction.
Exactly. Depending on how the government funding agencies decide to compete those, you could potentially get some traction. Another one that I think is worthwhile to keep an eye on and one that will dominate is two of the defense information systems agencies. So there was certainly an uproar when they went LPTA for that Encore 3 vehicle. And that, in terms of how we see it, may be less relevant because it will handle some of the low margin type work and do the operations and maintenance type work to keep things going. But when you're discussing the emerging technologies and actually overhauling these systems, DISA is also in source selection with a vehicle known as Systems Engineering Technology and Innovation, or SETI, which is valued at $7.5 billion. And that's going to handle more of the actual, you know, construct from the ground up.
So, yeah, I live in Columbia. SETI is one of the ones that's commonly discussed when you're walking around the mall.
Yes. So those two in relation, Encore 3 and SETI at DOD, are certainly another one that we're keeping an eye on in source selection. In addition to some of those individual ones, I know at the budget briefing that we discussed before break there, we also identified an anomaly somewhat within Army itself. So if you remember back a couple months ago, they took about 2 years, and finally we got to the award of RS3, which is $37 billion or so, and handles professional services at the Army. But there's still a number of individual Army opportunities. In fact, we have identified about 9 of them, totaling $55 billion, that Cameron covered at the briefing. And those include, as we mentioned, the human resources vehicle known as HRS 2, which is valued at $7.6 billion. And then we've got some other ones, Joint Enterprise Research, Development, Acquisition, and Procurement, or JERDAP. And that's another one at $8.3 billion. So the Army's got about 9 that Cameron spoke about, totaling $55 billion. So I don't know if there's anything that you want to highlight from that budget briefing in terms of what was discussed and how it relates to what's waiting to be awarded?
Well, we've been talking about at these Army briefings that we do every fall, Rob Levinson and I and you and Kevin Brancato and various elements of the Bloomberg government team have helped with these. But we've talked about how the Army is in a state of flux. Over the last 3 or 4 years, the Army sort of woke up and said, we've been fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq against small-scale, often it's company or platoon-level operations against less sophisticated adversaries since 2001. And we are not well-trained and we are not well-prepared to deter aggression by major peer competitors. And we need to take a step back and relook at our priorities. And so starting with Odierno and now General Milley as Chief of Staff of the Army has put a whole new sort of perspective on Army priorities for programmatic priorities, which in turn have contract implications. And those priorities are cover a large range of hardware problems, but they also include communications issues. And right at the top of the list is the Army's network. WinT has not kept up. There, the classic problem of the defense acquisition cycle is too slow when you're talking about high technology and emerging technologies and the refresh rate. Think about your iPhone, right? You know, every few years there's a new version. Well, you got to have the ability to keep up. And what they've discovered is the Army communication system is incredibly vulnerable. And so they've had to take a step back and think about what they've got to do differently. They put a hold on the WinT Increment 3, and there's a whole lot of shaking going on within the Army about their vulnerability to cyber attack, vulnerability to electronic warfare jamming. Those concerns, in turn, will affect the future budget and the future contracting requirements.
Okay. Anything to add there?
No, I think you identified at least the near-term budget and implications and priorities that were discussed at the Army briefing about 2 weeks ago at Bloomberg Government. Certainly some of the topics that we'll continue to keep an eye on and see how things transition.
Well, you touched one issue there that's pretty interesting. That's the fourth or fifth element of warfare, and that's just the cyber realm, and they're standing up the cyber command as a separate entity now. So when might I anticipate getting a BGov report on what's going down the pike here? I understand they have to stand it up first before they're going to issue vehicles, but what and any tea leaf reading here?
I don't have any indication of how that's going to pan out. No, it's something we're certainly keeping an eye on in terms of how the reorg may translate down and how it may impact contractors. But as it develops, our senior defense analyst and Rob Levinson, as well as Cameron, will continue to monitor all things defense.
Rob's been watching that closely because, of course, Cyber Command is being spun out of the Strategic Command. Air Force is the executive agent for STRATCOM and will be for CyberCom, and Rob is a retired Air Force intelligence officer, so it's near and dear to his heart. So he is definitely watching that closely, and it'll be interesting to see whether the contracting patterns that obtained in the current structure will continue or whether they will be major shifts in how they approach the vendor community and as they become a separate entity. Knowing the way DoD does business, and Mark, you and I've talked about this multiple times, it's not just what they buy, it's how they buy.
Right.
That the changes will be gradual and take place over time, and that I don't expect drama, but we'll have to wait and see.
Well, I guess I'm fishing. Do you think initially they might use DISA vehicles or DIA vehicles or
I think
we may not even know about?
Yeah, I think they're going to rely on existing vehicles in the near to medium term. That totally makes sense to me.
Cool.
Existing vehicles. I think if we're talking about that, one interesting contract is DEOS or the contract being created right now to change and overhaul the email system, right? So right now they're considering going to a new system that's subscription-based so they can build on different DOD components. So that could be an example to see how that develops and see what comes of it. They have put in a caveat that if contractors come too high on price, that they will build their own. But
build their own.
Yeah, that scares me. Yeah, we've been to that movie.
Yeah,
doesn't end well.
Rode that donkey before and it went backwards. All right, you're listening to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com, 1500 AM. We will wrap up right after this. Welcome back to AmTower Off Center on FederalNewsRadio.com, 1500 AM. I'm here today with Cameron Luthy and Dan Snyder, both of Bloomberg Government. Find them on LinkedIn or find them. What's the website? BloombergBGov.com?
Yes, sir.
BGov.com.
www.bgov.com is where we host all of our exclusive analysis as well as cover all
of the
Any of
these reports downloadable there?
Many of them are. The majority that we have discussed today are behind the paywall, available to clients only. And then we do publish a free marketing blog that people are invited to participate and take a look at it.
Our marketing team takes key stories that they think are interesting to the vendor community and puts them outside the paywall every week.
Cool. Yeah. I have to get on that list. Because we've been in this CR situation for 20 plus years, 30 plus years.
A long damn time.
Contractors, contracting officers, and program managers have to be innovative in how they can get their jobs done when, quote, no new programs are allowable. Mm-hmm. So give me some solutions here. Let's start there.
Sure. So I guess we'd like to discuss some of the trends or emerging themes that we think will eclipse some of the things that have taken place before and dominate fiscal 2018 and some of the stuff that is developing as well. So some of the trends that we're continuing to watch are other transaction authority or OTAs. Category management and their push towards best-in-class vehicles and what that definition really means and how you achieve such label. And then some of the other things such as simplified acquisition procedures and how the rules behind those may make it more flexible for the government to use their discretion and use these FAR rules to get requirements out the door and make their job a little bit easier.
Simplified acquisitions has a dollar cap, though, of something ridiculously small in comparison to the normal,
the typical
scheme.
Size.
Right. Yeah. So they're continuing to increase the simplified purchase threshold, and we think that's going to based on Bloomberg Government's data the past 3 years. So they've increased it. I think it's just under about $20 billion right now. Of aggregate SAP stuff that goes through. So as we continue to increase these thresholds, that amount could continue to knock up and make it a little bit easier for contracting officers to do, you know, products and transactions on a more easier basis.
The related issue that Congress has been pushing over the last 4 years is the expansion of the definition of a commercial item, which allows them to the government to buy things that don't easily, you know, the definition has been sold to commercially. It started off, and now it's it's been available commercially. It doesn't have to actually have been sold. And now they're talking about, well, if it's been sold to a foreign government, that might, you know. So the idea here is it's all about the government's inability to access emerging technology or technology where there's a very rapid refresh cycle using traditional acquisition methods and strategies. That's what the push is about.
And that's one of the things that I led with was the emerging technology or emerging trends in fiscal 2018 is this idea of OTA. So a lot of our clients have been talking about it nonstop. I know Cameron's been tracking it closely. And we at Bloomberg Government are trying to understand how they can be used to contractors' advantage. So for those who aren't familiar with them, the other transaction authority is facilitated through a consortia. So that's established by Congress, and you can join this fairly simply. You pay $500 to be part of this consortia, and then the government can issue work and orders through these consortias. And the idea behind that is that it increases the ability to award work to small business, and it allows the government to turn stuff around and react more quickly. So say, for instance, if there's a cyber threat that occurs, they could award something through these consortias on a fairly easy basis without having to go through the competition procedures, open market that usually take about 9 months or so.
Now, and these consortia can have an enormous number of members. So it's not like an exclusive club.
So is there one big consortia, or are there multiple consortias? Or
there are, I think, at least five right now.
Are they in specific areas?
Exactly. Okay. So there's one called the Command, Control, and Communications in Cyberspace, or C5. And obviously, that's a narrow focus. It's not just everything. And there are hundreds of companies that belong. So it's not as though the government doesn't have, in a sense, competition, but maybe not in the traditional acquisition way of thinking.
Okay.
And
not going to see it in FBO.
Right. And so right now, for example, they put out a call for white papers, and they will review the white papers, and then they'll make a decision. DOD will, you know, and the current call for white papers is to take a jammer that the Navy has for jamming the signals sent to improvised explosive devices, the roadside bombs that have been so dangerous in Iraq and in Afghanistan. And they want to use it. They want to enhance this jammer to make it better able to jam frequency hopping signals for aerial drones. So instead of roadside bombs, now we want to take this technology to the next level. And that's an example of being able to access non-traditional the defense contractors from the tech world through these consortia using other transaction authorities. So I'm working on this piece right now.
They're interesting. So I guess
I want to see it.
Yeah, absolutely. It's cool stuff. You know, and I've reached out to Northrop Grumman builds the jammer.
Yeah.
And they are indeed a member of the consortia. So
I'm shocked.
So but you have all these small innovative firms that are also in the consortia. So that's the you know, an example of how the Defense Department is taking a different approach to acquisition.
One thing that I was going to mention is I think it's, we've been talking about perhaps holding the Mythbusters about what these are, what they can do, what they can't do. So one of the voiced concerns that we've heard amongst clients is this really an order? It looks like an order, it smells like an order, but there's no binding agreement, right? So, I mean, I'm all for advocating that something gets done quicker, something gets done correctly, but there's also these procurement regulations in place. I took some procurement law classes at George Washington, and Professor Schooner there would always drill into your head these desiderata principles. So it's transparency, competition, and these principles that the procurement is built on. So it'll be interesting to see how these OTAs are continuing to evolve in relation to what happens if we, the government, don't get what we need. Where do we protest against this OTA? So it's new. I think contractors need to be looking at it.
How new is new?
Well, it's been around for a while. It's sort of a pendulum swing. There was they attempted to use this process with the infamous Army Future Combat System.
Oh, yes.
And Congress said, "Whoa, Nelly, don't do that again." So it's. I think this, as the pendulum has swung back to trying to use OTAs more in the last couple of years, it's more about high tech and not about big traditional acquisition programs.
That's a great point, Cam. So I think one of the common problems, even at DHS, is that we have a threat and we need to respond to it. And a small business could have the solution. How do we get to them quickly before it's too late and there's not an insider threat that we're exposed to? So hypothetically, the consortium could be a solution to that.
Cool. Give me some final thoughts here. We're down to about 2 minutes, so who wants to go first?
Well, there's a lot of opportunities that are going to be competed this year. There's some very big vehicles, as Dan outlined, that are very important to the contracting community. And no matter when the budget gets done, the federal government's going to spend a lot of money in fiscal 18.
That's for sure. And I'll just reiterate what Cam mentioned there. And I'll be following and continuing to track which vehicles will be the most popular. We certainly think some of the most popular multiple award contracts are best in class, as they're defined with category management, will continue to dominate in fiscal 2018. So as these new vehicles that we're talking about in source selection begin to be awarded, and there's a bit of a shakeup in how we acquire some of the most important goods and services like IT and professional services, is something that we'll be hyper involved in continuing to track.
Cool. I want to emphasize one thing here. This interview took place because I attended a Bloomberg briefing about 3-4 weeks ago, the Army briefing. If you get invited to a Bloomberg briefing, let me suggest that you go. The information's going to be top-notch. And again, the networking, these are two of my major criteria. Number three is who the hell's putting it on. And BGov, they're a significant part of this market. This is not a commercial for them. I don't get paid by BGov, but I really enjoy going down there. So if you get an invite, get your butt out of your office, go down. It's worth your time. This is not my day job. If you need help on the marketing side of government, I try to take information like this and mold it into the marketing plan. Marketing people have to know how the government's buying, what vehicles are emerging, where their companies fit in the food chain. So if you need advice on this, let me know. Reach me at mark@federaldirect.net. And thank you for listening to AmTower Off Center.
You've been listening to AmTower Off Center, sponsored by General Dynamics Information Technology. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show or any of our weekly programs anytime at federalnewsradio.com. AmTower Off Center, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.